Edward III was a remarkable monarch. He initiated the Hundred Years' War and achieved many victories on the battlefield. He also reformed the feudal system of England, restoring the title of Duke to members of the royal family and granting it to all five of his sons. Edward concentrated power in himself, and as soon as he died, the system he had built began to crumble. The Wars of the Roses are thought to have begun in 1455, though the underlying conflict between the York and Lancaster dynasties can be traced back to the death of Edward III in 1377. The first son, Edward the Black Prince, was supposed to inherit the power, but he died before his father. Even so, the crown did not pass to another son of Edward III, but instead to his grandson. Richard II, the son of the Black Prince, became king at just 10 years old. The Council of Regents for the young king was led by Edward III's third son, John of Gaunt. He already had experience in governance, as he had managed the kingdom while his father was ill, and continued to do so during Richard II's reign. It is important to note that it was John of Gaunt who inherited Lancaster through marriage, making him the first Duke of Lancaster. His illegitimate son John became the Earl of Somerset. Together, they would become crucial supporters of the Lancasters in the upcoming war. Richard II proved to be an inept king. He was easily swayed and thoughtlessly granted titles. Revolts began to rise against him, including the Peasants' Revolt, as well as the Lords Appellants' Rising. In the Lords Appellants' Rising, the king's cousin, Henry Bolingbroke, the son of John of Gaunt, participated. Later, Richard exiled him from the country and disinherited him after his father's death. That same year, the king went to fight in Ireland. This feudal endeavor became the perfect opportunity for Henry Bolingbroke to return home and raise a rebellion. On his way to London, he was supposed to be stopped by his uncle, Edmund of Langley, the fourth son of Edward III and the first Duke of York, who had founded the dynasty by inheriting the relevant lands. As a representative of one of the wealthiest families in England, Edmund decided that he would strengthen his position even further by siding with Henry and abandoning the king. Together with his son Edward of Norwich, who commanded Richard's forces, they avoided battle and switched allegiance to Bolingbroke. The Yorks and Lancasters united as the most powerful dynasties in England, and for the first time, the throne was held by a Lancaster, Henry IV. His first order was to imprison the old king, where he is believed to have died, starved to death. Naturally, in the eyes of some English lords, Henry appeared to be a common usurper. In the very first year of his reign, a group of four earls conspired to kill the king at a tournament and restore the then still living Richard II to the throne. Henry was saved by his cousin, Edward of Norwich, who initially participated in the conspiracy, but later revealed the names of all the traitors. That same year, the Welsh, led by Owen Glendower, revolted against the English. This uprising lasted for 15 years and was only suppressed by the next king and son of the previous one, Henry V. With a numerical advantage and by reconciling with some Welsh lords, he regained control of Wales. Nonetheless, by using French support for the Welsh rebels as a pretext, he reignited the Hundred Years' War. Lords also conspired against Henry V, planning to kill the king on his way to France and place Edmund Mortimer, another descendant of Edward III but through his mother's line, on the throne. The conspiracy was uncovered in Southampton. The conspirators, including Richard Cambridge, the younger brother of the Duke of York, Edward of Norwich, were sentenced to death. Meanwhile, Henry V was achieving victories in the Hundred Years' War. He quickly defeated the French and captured Paris. According to the peace treaty, Henry was to inherit the French crown from King Charles VII the Mad. To secure this, he married his daughter, Catherine of Valois. This played a cruel trick on the Lancasters, as Henry's son, the future King Henry VI, inherited madness from his French grandfather. There was another grim piece of news for the Lancasters. Edward of Norwich, who died childless at the Battle of Agincourt, left the title of Duke of York to his nephew Richard, the son of the very Earl of Cambridge whom the king had recently executed. Richard York acquired significant holdings. In addition to his inheritance from his father's line, he also inherited the Mortimer estates from his mother, along with the rights to the throne, as two of his ancestors were sons of King Edward III. Becoming the richest and one of the most influential lords in England, Richard lacked only the authority of a military leader. As he grew up, he began to earn his reputation, and quite successfully. Starting in 1436, Richard took command of English forces in France. Henry VI of the Lancaster dynasty became king when he was less than a year old. Thus, a regency council ruled in his place during his early years, with its members constantly squabbling. When Henry VI grew up, he never became a strong monarch and married the influential Margaret of Anjou. The queen effectively took control of the governance. She faced two main problems. First, she was French, and the English were still engaged in the Hundred Years' War with France. Second, her power relied on William de la Pole, Duke of Suffolk, and Edmund Beaufort, Duke of Somerset, men loyal to the queen but inept military leaders. At the end of 1446, Edmund Beaufort displaced Richard York from his position and immediately suffered several defeats, significantly reducing English holdings on the continent. Meanwhile, Richard, who was popular among the soldiers, was sent to oversee yet another conquest in Ireland, which was effectively an honorable exile for him. Naturally, neither Margaret nor her favorites won the affection of the English. They were accused of betraying England and intentionally suffering defeats for the benefit of France. Internal problems also mounted. Officials borrowed so aggressively in the name of the feeble king that by 1450, the English crown's debt was 12 times the annual budget. High taxes and widespread corruption further diminished the popularity of the royal authority. Unrest began to escalate when the queen's favorite, William de la Pole, was captured at sea on his way to France and killed. That summer, a rebellion led by Jack Cade erupted in southern England. The rebels demanded the removal of the queen from power, the return of the Duke of York to command the army, and punishment for the incompetent commanders responsible for their defeats in France. By September 1450, Richard York had returned to England and settled with his troops in the vicinity of London. At the same time, Edmund Beaufort lost Normandy after the Battle of Formigny. The outrage over his defeat was so strong that when he returned to England, he was forced to hide in the Tower from an angry mob that burned his house. Amidst this, Richard York's popularity continued to rise. He returned to his ancestral lands, gathered his supporters, and a year later set out on another march toward London. This turned out to be a mistake, as Lancaster supporters also gathered forces outside the city walls. Instead of successfully seizing the capital, Richard had to swear allegiance to the king. In 1453, following news of a defeat in France, Henry VI's illness worsened. Richard York, a favorite among the soldiers, was appointed Lord Protector. Taking advantage of his new power, he imprisoned Edmund Beaufort, removed unpopular officials, and finally paid the long-overdue wages to the soldiers stationed in Calais. For this, though, he had to borrow money in his own name. Overall, the Yorks would have a particular history with debts throughout this conflict. It is important to note the significant changes occurring in England during these years. Ordinary English people were dissatisfied with the defeats in France. In contrast, the great feudal lords significantly expanded their armies. While armies had previously consisted solely of knights who pledged allegiance and typically numbered in the hundreds, now mercenaries who had fought in France for generations were returning. Unwilling to return to peaceful life, they were hiring themselves out to the lords. Lesser knights, who had holdings only in conquered lands in France and were nobodies in England, also became mercenaries. In addition, the ranks of mercenaries were filled by various younger or illegitimate sons of lords who did not lay claim to their parents' inheritance. It was these changes that allowed the Yorks, Lancasters, and other noble families to recruit thousands of soldiers for their armies. While dukes had previously only dreamed of waging war against one another, now they had the means to make those dreams a reality. That same year, in 1453, the Percys, allies of the Lancasters, and the Nevilles, supporters of the Yorks, ignited a war between themselves over land disputes. It became clear in England that both sides of the conflict were ready to take up arms, and peace in the kingdom would be elusive. In London, two distinct factions ultimately formed. In the future, William Shakespeare divided them by the color of their roses. York supporters were symbolized by the white rose, while Lancaster supporters were represented by the red rose, hence the name of the conflict. Despite the improbability of this version, historians have found it more appealing than dry academic terminology. In reality, the factions chose symbols based on their family coats of arms. In Yorkshire, the white rose was indeed popular in ornaments and appeared in Yorkist symbolism, but it was not the main emblem. The red rose of the Lancasters did not exist at that time. It is likely that Shakespeare invented the red rose simply to explain the origins of the Tudor white and red rose. Some suggest that the symbol of the Lancasters was the swan on their livery, but this was only worn by knights from the Queen's lands, demonstrating their loyalty to her. In 1455, Henry VI recovered. Richard York lost power once again. Edmund Beaufort was released from the Tower and took command of the Lancastrian forces. At that time, rumors circulated in England that Edmund was the Queen's lover and that Prince Edward, born a year earlier, was actually Beaufort's son. In response to this situation, the Lancasters gathered an army of 2,000 soldiers under Beaufort's command and headed north. York also assembled its supporters, among whom the most important was Richard Neville, Earl of Salisbury. Taking advantage of Beaufort's misfortune, the Yorkists surrounded his forces at St. Albans. The Lancastrian army was not even defeated in battle. They scattered due to the death of their commander. King Henry VI was captured. After heading to London, Richard York seized power. Moreover, he was set to inherit the crown upon Henry's death, which could happen at any moment given the king's frail health. In response, Queen Margaret moved to Coventry, where she continued to recruit supporters. Now the Lancastrian forces were led by Edmund's son, Henry Beaufort. In 1458, the factions even formally reconciled at St. Paul's Cathedral, but the conflict did not truly come to an end. When Richard Neville, the younger Earl of Warwick, arrived in England, there was an assassination attempt on him in Westminster. The Earl narrowly escaped death, and everyone blamed the Queen for the attempt. Margaret decided to take advantage of this situation. Knowing that none of the Yorkists would come to Coventry, she called for a parliament where York and all his supporters would be declared traitors to England. This time, Richard York formed two armies, one in the north under Richard Neville's command, and another in the west that he led himself. The Queen attempted to prevent the two forces from joining, but the Lancastrian army was once again commanded not by professional military leaders, but by loyal lords devoted to the Queen. As a result, at the Battle of Blore Heath, the Lancasters suffered defeat once again. Even the defeat at Ludford Bridge and his subsequent flight from England did not stop Richard York from continuing the war. He retained his supporters and returned to England a year later, once again gathering troops. Meanwhile, the Nevilles not only seized the southern coast, but also captured the king for a second time. Duke York once again occupied London, declared himself the heir to the throne, and effectively took all power into his hands. He then set off to the north to finish off the remnants of the Lancastrian army. At this time, the Queen was in Scotland, where she was recruiting mercenaries for her army to hold the north. Richard arrived there at the end of 1460 and positioned his troops near the Lancastrian camp. After Christmas, on December 30th, York inexplicably left the castle and headed to Wakefield, where he was met by an enemy force that was twice his size. Chronicles offer various explanations for Richard's decision, whether he feared being besieged, whether his intelligence had failed him, or whether Margaret of Anjou successfully deceived him. Just before the battle, a group of Lancastrian soldiers approached York under the guise of Allied forces and unexpectedly struck from behind. York's troops were defeated, and the Duke himself was killed in the battle. After Richard York's death, his allies quickly began to switch their allegiance to the Queen. Richard Neville, the younger Earl of Warwick, tried to resist but suffered defeat in the Second Battle of St. Albans. Following this battle, the young Prince Edward gained notoriety for ordering the execution of prisoners. In the future, Prince Edward would become known for his brutality, sadism, and penchant for executing subjects. Richard York's son, also named Edward, was leading troops in Wales at this time. Upon learning of his father's death, he resolved to seek revenge. Chronicles report that when the young York lined up his soldiers, three suns appeared in the sky. This was taken as a good omen, and the soldiers eagerly set out. Initially, Edward defeated local Lancastrian supporters, capturing their commander, Owen Tudor, whom he executed. Afterward, York moved to England, joined forces with the younger Neville, and reached London more quickly than the Lancastrian army, which had become distracted by looting after their victory at St. Albans. The people of London, unaware of the Lancastrian troops' current activities, gladly opened the gates to Edward York on the condition that he would protect them from the Lancasters. Parliament declared Edward York King of England as Edward IV. The Lancasters retreated once again to the north. Edward IV set out to reclaim his family lands and encountered the Lancastrian army near Towton. Some chronicles exaggerate the number of warriors on the battlefield, claiming as many as 100,000, and similarly inflate the casualties. On the other hand, the Battle of Towton was indeed one of the bloodiest in this war. Edward's forces had more knights and cavalry, allowing them to quickly drive the enemy into retreat. They pursued and killed most of the soldiers in the Lancastrian army. Queen Margaret and her son fled England. Henry VI hid in monasteries for a time, but he was eventually captured and imprisoned in the Tower. In England, aside from a few minor Lancastrian uprisings, during which Henry Beaufort was killed, peace reigned for decades. This tranquility was disrupted by the Earl of Warwick. During Edward IV's reign, Warwick became the wealthiest and most influential lord, holding numerous positions, and arranged marriages between his daughters and the king's younger brothers, George, Duke of Clarence, and Richard, Duke of Gloucester. The Earl of Warwick was deeply disappointed with the king when Edward IV secretly married Elizabeth Woodville. As the king stopped heeding Warwick's advice on foreign policy, serious disputes arose between them. When Edward refused to marry his brother to Warwick's daughter, the Earl raised a rebellion, defeated the king, and imprisoned him. Eventually, Warwick reconciled with the king, but only to flee England a year later and forge an alliance with Margaret of Anjou. Along with Warwick, the king's brother George also went to France. The conspirators, supported by the French, landed in England and surrounded the Yorkist forces. Edward IV fled the country. Henry VI was freed from the Tower and was proclaimed king again, while real power was seized by the Earl of Warwick. For these actions, his contemporaries dubbed him the Kingmaker. A year later, Edward IV, with the help of the Burgundians, returned to his homeland. In the Battle of Barnet, he defeated Warwick and set out to pursue Edmund Beaufort, the younger, who was with Queen Margaret and Prince Edward. Catching up with them at Tewkesbury, King Edward IV defeated the Lancastrian army. Beaufort and Prince Edward were executed after the battle, while the queen was imprisoned until she was ransomed by the French king. Soon after, the former king, Henry VI, died. Most historians believe he was murdered on Edward IV's orders. The country experienced another decade of peace. During this time, England was only briefly shaken by the minor rebellion of the Earl of Oxford, a short-lived war with the French that yielded nothing, and a conspiracy led by the king's brother George, Duke of Clarence. The conspiracy was uncovered, and the Duke was executed. Legend has it that he was drowned in a barrel of wine. Yet this peaceful period came to an end when King Edward IV died in 1483. His son, Edward V, inherited the throne at the age of 12, but was never crowned. Richard of Gloucester, the young king's uncle from the York dynasty, became Lord Protector and soon sought to have Edward IV's children declared illegitimate. The basis for this was the secret marriage to Elizabeth Woodville and the alleged betrothal of the king to another woman. After this, Duke Richard became King Richard III of England, while Edward and his younger brother Richard became prisoners in the Tower and disappeared from the pages of history. The fate of the princes remains unknown. The question became politicized as, if Richard III killed them, he would be seen as a cruel ruler who usurped the crown from his nephew, making Henry Tudor's actions a justified punishment for a tyrant. Conversely, if Richard III was not responsible for the prince's deaths, then Henry Tudor would be viewed as a usurper who overthrew a legitimate king. At that time, Henry Tudor was living in Brittany. The Tudors were a noble Welsh family descended from the semi-legendary kings of Gwynedd. Henry's father, Edmund Tudor, was the half-brother of King Henry VI. Moreover, Henry's mother belonged to the Beaufort family, making him the closest heir to the extinct Lancaster dynasty. He gathered supporters around him, and after Richard III became King of England, he was secretly supported by Elizabeth, the widow of Edward IV, who even promised to marry her daughter to him. During those years, Henry Stafford, Duke of Buckingham, rebelled against Richard III. It's unclear why, as Henry had previously been one of the new king's closest allies. Henry Tudor reached out to Stafford, planning to unite their forces to jointly defeat Richard III. Nonetheless, Richard III defeated Stafford before Tudor could reach England due to a storm. Tudor's campaign ended in failure, but he still left Brittany, as he had become an unwelcome guest there. Tudor continued to prepare for war. He had an army and support from secret allies in England, but the main assistance came from elsewhere. Girolamo Frescobaldi, a banker from Bruges representing local financiers, arrived to support Tudor. The issue was that the Yorks had accumulated a lot of debt during the wars. They owed the Medici Bank, which had just relocated from London to Bruges, 50,000 florins. Richard III had no intention of repaying these debts, as he was king and felt untouchable by mere bankers. Therefore, Frescobaldi financed Tudor to help him overthrow the king debtor. With the funds he received, Henry strengthened his army with 2,000 French mercenaries and acquired the technological novelty of the time: firearms. In 1485, he set sail for England with an army of 5,000 soldiers. Tudor's forces landed in Pembrokeshire, where they were immediately bolstered by units of Welshmen, who felt closer to the Tudors than to the Yorks. After securing Wales, Henry marched into England, where many minor lords began to defect to his side. At this time, Richard III was gathering forces in Leicester. To secure the loyalty of his vassals, he began taking their sons as hostages. This practice was old, but had become unpopular in those years. Not long before, Richard III's wife had died. Rumors quickly spread that Richard York had poisoned her to free himself for marriage to his niece, Elizabeth. The longer Henry stayed in England, the fewer chances Richard had for victory. Thus, he decided to confront Tudor. The armies met on Bosworth Field. Richard III's Yorkist forces were 1.5 times larger and held the higher ground. Still, the day before the battle, one of York's most prominent vassals, Thomas Stanley, who was Henry's stepfather, switched sides and attacked the Yorkist positions. Richard III could not bear such betrayal. He gathered a small group of loyal knights and charged into battle, aiming to kill Henry. He almost succeeded. Tudor's entourage was decimated, and only reinforcements saved Henry. Richard III was surrounded and fell, becoming the last king of England to die on the battlefield. Henry Tudor was proclaimed the new king, Henry VII. The Wars of the Roses came to an end, and barring some Yorkist uprisings, the Tudors brought peace to England. This conflict became a pivotal event in English history. Medieval England, which entered the war with lords and knights, emerged with cannons and mercenaries. The war dealt a severe blow to feudal families. Some simply vanished from history, while others weakened to the point of losing any political power. Instead, the new elite comprised merchants, bankers, craftsmen, and other townsfolk. As a result of the war, not only did the dynasty on the throne change, an entire era transformed.